Hi, welcome to Frame Society, where we discuss real-life issues in film. I'm Shanna.
I'm Sausage.
And I'm Merch.
And today we're talking about the film by... It's Kaufman, right? Charlie Kaufman?
Yeah.
I'm thinking of Ending Things. It released this year.
Yeah.
And it has a lot of unpacking, a lot
unboxing to do.
Yeah, like you think you open a box and you got stuff. No, you got another box. You got to open, honey. It's another.
Yeah, another.
It's like a bad Christmas present.
Yeah.
Actually, you know those Russian dolls? I think like
I think
they're called babushka.
Yeah, I mean. Is that
Matryoshka.
Yeah, they're matryoshka dolls, and this movie is a matryoshka doll.
Russian doll, yeah.
Yeah, Russian doll.
Yeah, the ones where you pull and like, the head stop coming in.
Yeah.
That could be a little bit.
And it'll stop coming in, and it'll stop coming in, and it'll stop coming in.
Yeah.
Yeah, those ones. Okay. So, we all watched the film recently, actually. And, I don't really know how to start this.
Kind of speechless.
The
movie's really hard to explain without giving everything away. I mean, we're gonna give it away. If you haven't seen the movie, spoiler alert,
don't
watch it first and then come back.
But, I mean, we're not spoiling it or revealing anything or explaining, because the film doesn't really have an explanation.
You can read it
in a lot of different ways.
So we're just showing our take on it.
It just not have an open ending. It is basically open all along.
Yeah.
From the beginning to the end. It's just like confusing.
It's kind of like we're returning to that whole concept that Bruce Carter wanted to impose into cinema, the movie that never ends. You choose where the movie ends.
Yeah, it is a different movie, like a really different movie. Never seen a movie like that, I've seen it, but like more on the indie scene.
Yeah,
like you know, Netflix usually don't produce those types of movies or don't buy them.
Yeah,
so. It's really interesting to see how, like, this giant of streaming is opening a little bit to more indie kind of vibe.
Yeah, and going out of the box, really, it's...
Yeah, and I'm pretty aware, and I think we can all agree, that not everybody will like this movie. I loved it.
Yeah, me too.
But I'm pretty sure that... the most like mass audience will maybe not like the thing.
Film
because it is 2 hours long.
Yeah,
and it feels like 10 hours.
Yeah,
if you're not habituated to a like
you know long films and slow-paced films,
maybe it's not the movie for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and long-developed ones, because you don't really understand, I don't think, at any point of this movie what it's about or what the hell is going on.
Yeah. In the climax, it's even more confusing. It doesn't reveal anything. Yeah. You'd be just like, what the fuck?
You'd be like, you end the movie and you're like, well, okay, that was an experience.
Well, time to Google it.
Yeah, basically. Wow. And yeah, I mean, I think first things first, we really need to talk about how well they use the aspect ratio they chose and the colors in the film, the whole
cinematography is
it's beautiful.
And
it's,
the movements, the camera movements are so great, because it films like the space in a way that it feels like really, really there's a feeling of loneliness attached to it. It can have like two persons in the frame or four, and you'd be like feeling lonely and feeling like, I don't know, it's really strange. I loved it.
Yeah, and even the sound, the way it was treated in the scenes where they are talking in the car, it kind of goes to listening to the sound as if you're in the car with them, and at times it's like you're outside hearing the conversation. And I think that's quite amazing. And one of the things that makes you question even more what your purpose and what your place in that movie is, if you're just really in the audience or if you're part of something bigger.
Yeah, it's the whole movie is a very, in the best way possible, it's a very unsettling experience.
Yes.
You are on edge from beginning to end. You are always trying to find your point of view, where you fit in, what you are watching, who are you like going on this journey with? Who is the main character?
And
who is the story about? And you know, when you get to the end and when you research a little about it afterwards, you just go, oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Usually movies, commercial movies, tend to place the audience more on a comfortable spot where, like, you don't move because you're the spectator, you're out of the movie, you're just watching and you just see things happening, and it's all really fast. You don't have time to question anything. It's just like action, action, action. And like today, 2-hour movie feels like 20 minutes, really.
Yeah.
And this movie just wants you to be uneased and to be uncomfortable and to be like, really, you want this scene to end because it's so awkward and so strange, but it doesn't end, and it kept on going for all the duration of the movie.
Yeah.
That's really, like, smart. For me, it is, at least.
Yeah, that feeling of... Yeah, exactly. I was watching the movie, and I was like, is the whole movie going to be them in this road trip? Are they going to reach a destiny? Are they even going to... I was starting to think he was actually a serial killer who was trying to get her to isolated place.
Yeah, to kill her.
Yeah.
And you really feel that all the movie is going to be on the car. And I think like 50% of the movie is in the car.
Yeah.
And
I think a little more, actually. More than 50%.
I mean,
they spend a lot of time
in
the
house
too.
Yeah.
But in the farm.
At the ending? I don't know which one is it.
At the end?
Yeah.
Or in the end.
I don't
know.
The end part. When they leave the Jake's parents' house. The time is also spent at the in the car, but you also have that part at the school, so but
yeah.
That's not that big.
But I mean, I feel like the car is really like the center place of this
of
thing,
the movie,
and that's really strange because usually the car is not a place where you settle scenes, it's a place where you make like small conversations, small talks happen, never really. Important stuff happening in a car, and like all the movie or most of the movie happen in a car.
And so to we should maybe start getting in a little more depth to the movie. So the movie starts with this woman who we never really get to meet through a real name. We start by calling her Lucy, but that then changes while the film progresses. So she's waiting for her boyfriend of a few weeks, months, to pick her up.
She doesn't even know, actually.
Yeah, she's unsure of when she met him, actually. And she's going on a road trip with him to meet his parents. And that's what they give you. That's
the plot.
That's the plot.
And trailer.
And then things start to get weird. So she gets in the car and they start talking about all this really existential stuff and about art and media and how it relates to, you know, the construction of the self.
Yeah.
And all this deep stuff. And while that dialogue is happening, the woman is really trapped inside her head, thinking of ending things. She thinks she's even though she really likes Jake, the guy, she doesn't really...
Thank you.
She doesn't really know if she can have a future with him. She doesn't know why, but she just can't keep up with that relationship. So she's thinking of ending things. She even feels wrong for meeting his parents and everything.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, Jake reacts as if he can
hear
her
talk,
her thoughts. Yeah. And that begins to, you know, leave you on edge, and you're
it's
okay,
really creepy.
What's happening?
Kind of unstable feeling that it's as if people sometimes joke with that thing in comedy movies, like someone thinks
something
wrong,
and then the other be like, "You said something."
Yeah, but in this is,
it's never addressed.
Yeah,
it's just like it's never addressed. You see him react silently to her thoughts, and then you just be like, what are you thinking about? But it never like said, oh, I heard that, or it never really shows that he hear it. Maybe it's just reacting to other things, you know? But it's really strange because you don't know where to. Maybe he has powers, you know, you can think that, okay. Or maybe they have a weird connection that, you know, you just don't know. And at the same time, while this is all happening, it cuts to a janitor, like, doing things. And like
eating, cleaning the floors,
watching a movie, and you just like don't know why it's here.
The janitor.
Yeah, the janitor is really like you see it and you feel like, okay, it's strange, but let's just ignore it for now.
Yeah. And then you get to the house after a long car ride full of information about the characters and how, you know, how neither of them are really sure of who they are. They keep changing their
opinions and position
on things.
Yeah.
But it's on a really superficial level at this point. And then they get to the house. And while they get to when they get to the house,
this is when it gets old.
Yeah, this is when it gets weird, yo. It's
like a horror almost. Like,
it's
whoa.
Terrible.
Like they pull up to the house. They get out of the car. And there's the mom, and there's the mom
waving
like,
oh,
without stop at them. She just keeps waving and waving and waving. She doesn't leave the window.
So
and they are, and Jake says they are going to take a walk and see the rest of the farm before they get in.
Yeah.
And the mom's still there.
And then you start, like, everything you felt about Jake in the car, like, okay, it's strange, it's awkward, maybe the movie's about him, like, he's a bad guy.
And then you meet the mom and
you meet the mom and you'd be like, okay, the parents are strange, the parents are the problem.
And even when he starts showing her the rest of the farm, he also has this kind of conversation about things as if they're all sad and dead, the way he talks about the pigs.
I was getting to that. The house has a very like it's almost like a place of mourning, of grief, because everything's connected to death in that house. Exactly the moment when you get there, you see that there's so much death there. We're in the middle of a blizzard, and at this point it started in the car. We're in the middle of a blizzard.
In
the middle of nowhere.
In
this farm, and Jake shows like the barn, and there's dead lambs frozen, dead like corpses frozen there, and he's just like, oh, that's normal, my dad will take it out in a few days. And he's like, oh, funny story, there was this pig one time that didn't move for like a week, and then when my dad went to finally make him move, maggots were eating it alive. And you're like, okay, nice picture.
Yeah, I mean,
totally wanted to see that in my mind. Thank you. And you start to be like, okay, what the hell is happening with this family?
Yeah, you start feeling that Jake is really strange, that his parents are really strange, he doesn't feel anything. And really, you start feeling uncomfortable for the woman, Lucy, or whatever her name is, right? And you be just like, okay, she needs to get out. She's gonna die. She clearly gonna die.
Yeah.
And you start feeling this empathy towards her, where you feel, okay, this is the main character. This is like the person I'm supposed to follow, the person I'm supposed to be empathic with.
Yeah.
And so you be just like, okay, run, girl, run.
Yeah. And it starts like that. And then once you finally get into the house, there's a long wait until you meet the parents. And while that wait is happening, you start to find a lot of weird stuff, like there's a dog, but there isn't a dog, and the dog behaves in a super weird way where it's always like
frantic.
Yeah, like
it's weird. You feel like she is lost in the middle of like another dimension.
Yeah.
Because like the blizzard makes you feel like there's nothing around, and it's really like made to make you feel like that. And so there's nothing around, just this house. And then everything is super strange in there, and everything is super awkward, and you really feel like, where did she went? It was not that the, like, when she is in the city waiting for Jake, like, it feels normal. It feels like, okay, normal city, right?
Yeah.
And then she get on the car and she just, like, change dimensions. She just, like, where are we?
Yeah, it's like a door to that scene, not that specific scene, but like the whole thing Interstellar also kind of goes on about. It's the whole multidimensional. What is time?
Are we present, future, past? Are we there or there?
And that plays a lot in the house when we finally meet the parents, because while this meeting is taking place, you know, there's an awkward dinner. Well, where things become more unsettling, because who we know as Lucy at this point, the woman, receives calls on her phone.
From another woman from called Lucy.
And then it's Lucia.
Yeah,
and she was a painter. And then at the start of the dinner, she was a painter. And then she was
a student.
And then she was a quantum physicist. And things just start to feel like out of place. And the parents change appearance. They change age. They become older and younger. Like, in between, in between the cuts, frames.
Yeah. Like, just a second, you just, like, they usually change it, like, the vision. Like, you know, they go, like, from the kitchen to the living room, and boom, they're old. And then they go to the room, and boom, they're young. And you just be like,
okay, what's happening? And, for example, Lucy's hair, we'll refer to her as Lucy.
Yeah.
Lucy's hair changes, like her hairstyle.
And her outfits.
And her outfit as well.
Yeah.
And you start to, you know, be like, okay, so she might not die at the hands of the guy, but she sure as hell ain't in a good place.
Yeah.
What is happening? What's this? And
nobody reacts.
That's
strange. Nobody reacts. It's like, okay, now they're old and now they're young and now we're here and now I'm like that. And you just react. It's strange. It, like, this movie just, like, all the codes that cinema has established for the past years, it just went like, no.
No.
No. We don't do that in here.
And so there's a lot of that stuff going around, and maybe we should wrap up the. It's so hard to speak about this because I don't even know how to start explaining the codes and what we thought of the movie without, like,
explaining it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, there's all this weird stuff happening in the house, and the basement is locked away. Is a place that's locked away. That Jake says you can't go in there. It's not safe. I never liked the basement. Please don't go in there. And
the door is scratched.
Yeah.
And she asked him, dog. It was the dog, yeah.
Yeah, the dog. Right, the dog. You feel like there's a monster in here.
Yeah.
Like, you really feel like in the basement there's something bad.
Yeah.
But there's not.
There's weirdness.
Yeah, but there's weirdness everywhere.
Yeah.
So it's nothing different.
This thing with the parents keeps going. And you see, like, you know, there's a point where his dad has dementia and his mom is dead in a hospital bed in, like, the living room. And then, like, right after that, Lucy, goes down the stairs. I'm sorry. Like, goes down the stairs. And then the mom is there, like, in her 20s, 30s. And she's like, all right, honey, I gotta take care of my kid. Go put this in the washer in the basement after all this weird shit happens, basically.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, but, you know, Jake said I couldn't go to the basement because, you know, it's creepy or whatever. And she says something along the lines of, like, don't listen to what Jake says, whatever.
As a kid.
Yeah.
She basically said, is it just a kid?
Yeah, like, well, whatever. Yeah. And she goes into the basement and she opens the washer, and the washer is full of janitor outfits, of janitor, like, uniforms.
Yeah.
And you're like, hold on.
Wait, with Jake written on it.
With Jake.
This is the first time that you start to understand, oh, wait, so Jake is the janitor. So they are connected. There is something. So maybe we're watching, like, Jake's memories.
Yeah.
Like, because you know, you feel like you're watching Jake's memories, and that's the timestamp where you start feeling, okay, so maybe
I understand this.
Maybe Lucy is not the main character.
Yeah.
Even though, like, and this is like a lot into the movie.
Yeah, it's like an hour.
Movie. And you just start realizing now, okay, maybe she's not the main character.
Yeah. And at this point in the basement, I think she enters the basement two times. And one of the times she finds paintings that in the beginning of the dinner she said were painted by her, but then she finds them stored in the basement.
With Jake's name on it.
Yeah. And you're like, hold on, so Jake painted them. And there's this weird thing with a portrait that she sees herself, but then she looks again and it's Jake. And he's like, yeah, I guess we could look alike. And you're like, okay,
this
hold on.
Weird. Yeah, and then that thing where she sees the paintings, she goes to the photo.
And there's no pictures. Yeah, because she had photos. She had photos of her paintings, and she showed them at the dinner through her phone. But then, when she goes into the basement, which I mean, at this point, we can tell it's the subconscious.
Yeah.
Because the subconscious never lies. She doesn't have any pictures, and this is the moment we realize.
We realized it a little bit earlier, actually, when she goes into the bedroom and she reads a book where it's her own poetry.
Yeah,
and there are Quentic books on the shelves about stuff that discussed in car, and you'd be like, "Wait, this is weird."
Yeah, but I think the moment where you see that there are no pictures, that there is no proof of what of everything she said she's done in her life, I think that's the moment you say she's a fantasy.
I mean, yeah, maybe.
So yeah, spoiler alert: Lucy is not real. She's a thought by Jake.
I mean, actually,
supposedly. Actually, I mean, she's real because thoughts are real, but
yeah, but nothing is real. Yeah. Actually, nothing is real. Like, and that's why the parents keep changing, because like he has lived with his parents like all his life, right?
Yeah.
And so they have go through phases and ages, and he has all these memories of them, and he's trying just to figure out which would be the best, like, the best time to present to their parents Lucy, the girl, his girlfriend
that he actually met but didn't meet. So in the beginning of the dinner, Lucy tells the story of how they met, that they were at a trivia night, and he was in the next table, and he kept looking at her, and she said, okay, he's dorky, he's cute, whatever, and then they get to talking some way, and she gives him his number, and they start dating, yada, yada, yada. And then, at the end of the movie, she retells the same story, but she says she never gave him his number, because she never gave him her number, sorry, because he kept looking at her, and he was a creepy dude that didn't leave her sight while she was at that bar at trivia night, and she fled from him, and so they also never met. So with this kind of information and the changes in the parents and everything, you can kind of see that Jake the janitor is
Jake the janitor. This is a great kid show.
Yeah, Jake the janitor.
The nice janitor cleans your school.
Nice. Yeah.
And so he's thinking of this fantasy that isn't just Lucy. It's the parents. It's the house. It's everything. He's rewriting it and changing it
as it
progresses, and he's going back and going forth and trying to figure out, I think, how different his life could have been if he actually talked to this woman,
this perfect girl.
Yeah, to this girl that he idolizes now, has his she could have been his turning point, his saving spot, basically his person. And I think that goes a lot in the film, like, how do I say this? Oh God.
It's okay.
So Jake is going through everything, and one thing we see actually is that his fantasy is not only influenced by his thoughts and by his different analysis of what could have happened, but by media and by what he consumes
movies.
Daily.
Yeah,
movies,
yeah.
Books. So that's why the poem that he likes in the beginning of the movie, Lucy says she's written it, and no, the janitor has read it at some point in his life and liked it, and since he liked it, he wanted it.
The perfect woman to have write it to.
Yeah, and yeah. And he likes quantum physics and art, and he puts that in the woman. There's this part where he's watching a movie, and it's kind of like a parallel to what's happening in the other.
It's like he's watching a movie, and there's this girl in the movie that like is like, you know,
the
quirky
main,
perfect
yeah.
main character that you know every guy would like or every girl would like, and there's a point in the movie where they are him, Jake, and Lucy in the car, and then like in between the cut, she
it
changes
switches,
and
yeah.
she you. It's not Lucy anymore, it's the actress from the movie.
Yeah.
But like talking as if she was Lucy, because Lucy has not
she's not a permanent self.
She's not an
state
appearance.
Of self.
She's not an appearance, she's not an identity. She's just like a mixture of everything Jake idealizes and likes. And it's just like this thing, basically.
And so I guess with this, I think we finally are able to start to explain stuff. So since this movie is a giant changing daydream by the janitor, and so there's this line that keeps getting, you know, torn and repurposed and rewritten
it's like what I feel in that point where the characters are always repeating stuff, like she's always saying, I have to go home early, I have to go home early, and she's always saying, I'm thinking of ending things. And that scene that is even more infatuated, where she's walking up down the stairs
and
it's
it keeps
always
seeing,
happening.
Yeah.
Because I think that those parts are just explaining, like, even in his daydreaming, his fantasies, Jake cannot stop thinking about routine and about boredom and about everything always repeating itself. And it's just like, you can just see that even if that old janitor is thinking of what his best his life could have been, he cannot idealize it, because the woman he likes always wants to go, and everything keeps always repeating itself, and nothing is new, nothing is old, everything is always the same.
So, and this kind of like almost nihilistic fantasy comes, you can see there's a lot of self-esteem issues in here.
Yeah.
Jake thinks he's never worthy of anything, and so even in his wildest fantasies, in his biggest dreams, he's alone, he's isolated,
he
thinks he's not worthy of a normal life, basically, and so he has this longing for something he never truly had, and this daydream is a perfect, like, writing and rewriting of that thought, and in this sense, there's this big weight of existential dread both in Jake and in the whole fantasy, because like the title says, everyone in this movie is trapped in the thought of ending things. So while we in the beginning believe it's tied to ending an unfulfilling relationship, it's realizing that this is ending existence, actually. So the woman wants to cease to exist as a fantasy, because the person that created the fantasy doesn't believe to deserve this
I even think that.
And I think the fantasy knows it's a fantasy, and so
I don't think that way. I think it, like, Jake as creator of all the characters we see on screen, I think that Jake because he wants to end things, because he's tired, he even gets tired of his fantasies, and so he implements the thought of ending things on the characters he imagined, because it is so within him, this desire of ending everything, that he reflects and he puts himself into the fantasy and the characters.
That's actually a great reading of the thing. Actually, I didn't think of that.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, and so so there's this thing with Jake. Jake really wants to stop either living that way or living at all, because he's so sick of boredom and routine and living a life that hasn't fulfilled him in so many ways. We never really get to know if he was able to study or not, what he really wanted, because he talks a lot about education and school,
but never. And because he is a janitor,
we can assume
that he never gets to study the things he likes and the
and even his job is such, like, is such an invisible job. You know, the kids pass by him every day and nobody ever really sees him, and that isolation that goes throughout all the film is such a great representation of everything he's feeling. He's feeling disconnected from his own life, from his reality, from, you know, and I think that's really interesting. I think I saw it in a YouTube video. I can't remember the author. There's someone read that he might even be battling with mental illness because of the following reasons. So this author, this person that I saw speaking about this, he correlates this to schizophrenia, that Jake might be schizophrenic, because in the car he talks about two movies, A Woman Under the Influence and A Beautiful Mind, and he says he relates a lot to the main characters and that he feels he's very similar to them, and both these characters are schizophrenic. And there's also a part, a really unsettling part in the house where they're eating that Yule log, that chocolate cake, that the mom says she has this ringing in her ear, but it's not ringing, it's whispers, like the universe is trying to tell her something. These voices that never stop. And that's a symptom of schizophrenia, is hallucination, auditory hallucinations. And in the car, I don't know if it's in the beginning or after they leave the house, Jake and the woman talk about how mental illnesses are oftentimes and most times a product or I think they even say a gift from the mothers of the people who have them, hence giving this relation between maybe having a hereditary problem in the family, maybe that it maybe runs in the family, that this mental illness maybe runs in the family. And so I found that really interesting, that there's this possible connection that would also explain better why he feels so isolated.
And I mean, it's possible. You know, another part of the movie that really, like, bugs me a lot, and I really don't know what to think about it, it's the ladies from the ice cream shop.
Yeah.
You know, there's two girls, and Jake described them before as the girls that, like, always laugh at him, and, you know, but the other girl seems like an old girlfriend of him, you know, memory of the cliche of an old girlfriend. And there's this part where, like, bruises appeared on her, and you can see bruises appeared on Lucy just after that. And so, and we seen Jake before being actually abusive towards Lucy, not physically, but, like, you know.
Yeah.
He doesn't. She's saying she wants to get home, and he never gets her home.
He has a really, like, a short temper.
Yeah.
And anger issues, and so you really, like, the first thing I thought when I saw this part is, like, oh my god, he is violent. It was violent, and so. Even, like, this memory of this girl that he had in her in his life and, like, disappear for whatever reason, we don't know. The memory of this girl, like, put her living, her bruises and the the abuse she lived onto and into Lucy.
You know what? I'm actually remembering that girl appears in the life of the janitor.
Yeah,
she's one of the kids in the school. Yeah. She's one of the kids that gets bullied at school.
Yeah.
And she never appears again
after
that. Where he's talking about, like,
and then
I see these kids and I see myself in them, and she passes him, and then we never see her again in the universe of the janitor.
It's really creepy.
Yeah.
It's really creepy because you don't understand, the timeline is so confusing. You don't understand when he meets her, where she was in his life. And I really, like, get strange feeling that, okay, might be really a strange relationship, a strange love relationship, you know, when he was young and she was young, or might even be when he was already a janitor and she was a student.
Yeah.
And that's really creepy, and that's really strange, and that's why I think this movie is so intelligent. It works with your own fears, and it puts them onto the screen, and you just, like, you just don't know what to get, and you just don't know what to think, and it could be this, but it could be that, and either way it's creepy, either way it's terrifying. Yeah.
And I think she says something while she gives the ice cream to Lucy.
She
says something about running, you have to run,
you have to leave.
Something about that, and you get this really unsettling feeling, and you think they're gonna develop on that,
but they never.
They never do. You just get that.
You just get that.
The movie from the ice cream commercial
just
gets appears after that. I think, I don't know. I'm not sure, but it's just so many things. Like, you're trying to process the whole thought of the
and
movie,
and it's impossible.
And it's just full
of things.
Yes,
of different things. And yeah, and the climax is so confusing because
the climax is a contemporary dance thing.
And it's a music, and then it begins to be a musical scene.
Yeah.
And then there's an animated pig with a pig there, and then the janitor is all naked, and you just be, what the heck am I watching?
Yeah.
And it's just like, you feel that Jake, the janitor, is really like an old dude with a really weird mind, and so this is the climax of his life, this is the climax of his, of everything, and when it all dies, you just see the car and the snow, and you just assume, we just assume
that he died,
because,
and, well, the dude stepped into a fucking blizzard
naked,
so
yeah. And I think that's the part where the pig appears, and when the climax
happens,
I think that's the part where the fantasy meets the reality.
Yeah.
So the janitor is so, like, Jake is so, like, into this thing and in this weird space where nothing is real and nothing is fake and everything is happening at the same time. He doesn't know anything more. It's really, like, this movie is about dying.
Yeah, because even his fantasy of what it would be like if he had someone like Lucy in his life, he doesn't change a lot of the details and things that people normally change when they fantasize about something. Even the parents' disease and the whole part of him taking care of their parents and his mother when she was dying, that scene, that also doesn't change. Even with Lucy there, he keeps being devoted to them, and the whole behavior, and that's what I think it's really quite, I don't know, my mind's struggling about this movie, because they put fantasies in a more realistic way even.
Yeah, but I do think that, like, the way the parents' characters are constructed are really cliche and stereotypical, you know, like, he doesn't like them, never liked them, because his mother is this, you know, overbearing mother, kind of weird, with maybe schizophrenia, with kind complex and things like that. And the dad is just like a dad, like not quite there. It's just like believing. And Jake never liked this place, never liked his parents, never liked the house. And you can see it the way he acts, because he's always uneasy with his parents.
Yeah.
You know, the mom is always trying to get close to him, and he's just like getting away. And even when he's taking care of her, it's just like, it looks like it's forced to be there.
Yeah.
Lucy's like, I want to go home. And he'd be like, wait, don't you see that we cannot? Because, like, I want to, too, but we can't. And it's really an easing, this part where like, you can see everything that he hates and everything that he likes in all this universe. And even when Lucy finds the janitor outfit, you can also read that as him never leaving the family house. Yeah. He always lived there.
Yeah.
He never left. And so he never liked that. And by the end, when he's singing that song, and
from the musical Oklahoma.
Yeah. And he is like, everybody looks like fake, fake old dudes. He's terrible. And but there, it feels at peace because everybody likes Jake. His mother is proud of him.
Yeah.
Lucy is proud of him, and he is. He feels like.
And the mother is alive. Why don't?
And yeah,
she's on stage sense. With him.
Yeah, and she and yeah. she is and she is not acting weird. She is acting like just a mother.
Yeah.
So
like
it's
normal mother. Yeah.
This is what he always wanted: a normal mother,
a family that was proud of him.
Yeah.
And a girl and to like and to share
people to that would like him because it would be important for some reason.
Yeah, it's the exact opposite of what he actually ended up with, alone and living a job that is not that satisfactory.
That dreamy.
Yeah, and that and what it's exactly what you were saying earlier, the fact that he has a job that makes him kind of invisible. Children and the other kids that go to the school don't care about the janitor. They even think it's kind of weird. I thought it was kind of weird when he approached the because then we have that moment where
the kids are rehearing the musical, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he gets up to them and they're like, can you like not?
Yeah.
It's really uncomfortable because we think, oh, poor guy, but at the same time it's like,
well, it's kind of weird.
Yeah. I would have felt that as well. Like,
you really feel like Jake's life is just like I'm gonna say that it's gonna sound terrible, but it's just like any other life. Normal life. It's just like sad. By the end of the of life, like, most people look back and be like, I never did anything of extraordinary. I never did anything that was good. Nobody's gonna remember me for things, and the life I lived were not that great. You know, it's just like working on in a normal job and living in a routine with my husband and my wife, or
alone,
and it's just like super sad when you watch this movie, and by the end you feel like you relate to Jake in a weird way that you'd be, I don't want to end up like that.
Yeah.
But it's so strange. It's like, you feel empathy towards him, but he's like, it's like so strange. It's so, he is so creepy of a dude and so like awkward. It's so, I don't know. It's really amazing for me to like at the end feel that connection with him. And I didn't want to. I was like, no, but I don't want to be like that. I don't want to understand him, but I kind of do.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's the kind of movie that kind of forces you to put yourself in the, not only in other people's shoes, but in your most uncomfortable pair as well. You're like, oh, you hate those heels? Oh, honey, you're gonna wear them.
Yeah.
It forces you to be uncomfortable and to reevaluate what you think, what you see, what you consume. Because I'm still amazed by how important the part is of the media, of what he reads, what he watches, how big that is in the fantasy. And it's just... And it's also really interesting because oftentimes our ideals of our like perfect life
are constructed
on media, on what we see in films and in books and everything. We're like, oh, I want to have this amazing, extraordinary, fulfilled life that I've read about and that I've watched.
And you don't even need to go to fiction. You just like people, like, you know, like
social media.
Yeah, you look like Instagram models and actors, and you'd be like, they must have a perfect life, a wonderful life. People know them. People like them. They earn money. They have everything they want.
Yeah,
a perfect boyfriend or girlfriend and a perfect life. Look at that car. Look at that house. And that's how
it's
we constructed our fantasy.
Yeah, it's this constant longing for something that's out of reach.
Yeah.
And the movie really makes you feel that, you know? You feel the longing the characters are experiencing, but you feel your own longing as well, and you reevaluate it.
That's terrible. The movie makes you afraid of...
Wanting something.
No, makes you afraid of the human.
Of life.
Of yeah. being human. Yeah. Of, because it's within us. We always want more. Everybody always wants more. Yeah, that's exactly. how it works. And so being afraid of that is being afraid of your essence as a human being.
Yeah.
And that's terrible. Like, you close, like, you close everything. You turn down your PC or whatever, your TV, and you just be like, okay, so can I be a dog now just so yeah. I don't think about that and yeah. I can be lazy all day and just scratch my ears?
It's this hyper self-awareness yeah. that goes throughout the film, throughout the characters, and then comes to you at the end of the movie. It isn't Lucy, it isn't Jake, it isn't the parents that are hyper self-aware.
It's you.
It's you, it's the viewer. You are reevaluating the whole movie and your whole life experience, like, after that. And it's this weird experience of knowing exactly where you stand as a human being, of always, of the possibility of never being satisfied. Of never being
satisfied.
Of never being able to really be fulfilled. And I think that's, you know, it's, I guess, the best part of the terror that yeah, they inflict.
I think it is, you know, it's a horror movie.
Yeah.
But it's not, like, normal horror. You know, like, we talk...
Psychological.
Yeah, now we usually talk about that new wave of horror that is yeah. more psychological. And we think about Hereditary or Harry Esther, basically, movies and, yeah. and things like that. And even this, like, I'm thinking of Ending Things, is so different from those, and I think it's, I won't say it's more efficient, if you are in the right
state of mind,
yeah, right state of mind when you're watching the movie, and you're not watching just to be entertained, but actually in the spot where you want to think and want to
yeah,
actually
learn it.
Yeah, when you watch this movie like that, I think it's much more efficient. It's a terror that is much more efficient than any other horror movie I've ever watched. And I love horror movies, okay? And so it's really because it doesn't play with visual.
Yeah, in a way to shock and yeah. Horrify people, but to horrify yeah. the mind with...
And it's not... A situation that is terrifying.
Yeah.
It's every situation yeah. that are terrifying. And it's your own situation as a spectator that is terrifying. It's not like the main character is living something terrible and you're just watching. It's much more creepy than that because you are living it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that I think starts within the moment. I remember starting watching the movie. I was amazed by the fact that it was the aspect ratio it was. I love when movies start like to risk that and do beautiful cinematography, and from the moment she starts, the Lucy character or not, starts to wander around her thoughts and live this existential dread throughout all of it and the conversations, and I think we all, or maybe just me, I don't know, I felt like that character because every single day we are like in this existential dread, like, what it actually is, the universe, why are we here, or why do I have to do this, something else, and that is something that makes us want to keep watching the movie, because we feel like we understand that character, and it pulls us into the movie and the plot, and it leaves us in that state you were talking about, we're like, what,
yeah.
okay, I don't know if I'm feeling comfortable with this, mainly because I'm kind of scared, and I think that also has to do with a lot of the comparison we do to ourselves with the life of others, and not only on media but on what people say their life is.
Yeah, basic
interaction.
Exactly. Yeah.
And we don't always, and I think that it comes to, we have to put things in perspective sometimes so we don't fall onto that rabbit hole that will never end, like that scene over going down the stairs. I think it's wonderful, because Yeah, or life, the general life, I think he started going down the rabbit hole because he was just comparing himself
to everybody
else. Yeah, just in a very hard core way, where it's just like, okay, yeah, I had to do this. I had to spend my whole life in my parents' house. I had to take care of my parents because they were sick. And now I'm just living this crappy life because I never had a girl that liked me. But in reality, did he really make something to change that? He just compared because, honestly, we sometimes think that's easier, like, just being sitting on the sofa and complaining about our lives and what...
Then to change things.
And what we don't have or we didn't have in the past, instead of just maybe thinking like, okay, I didn't have that, I don't have this currently, but maybe if I do something or if I change my way of thinking, this could be actually a good thing. Existential dread can be good if we put it in the right perspective.
Yeah. One of our teachers likes to say that, you know, it's okay to complain for a little while, but if you always keep complaining, it's not going to be productive.
Yeah.
Might as well do something about it if it's bothering you that much. And I mean, that's a very practical way to put it. I know it's not, it isn't easy to act on that, but I think it's a good motto to have in mind when in the moments in your life where you feel falling down the rabbit hole. It's like, okay, I can complain, I can feel sad, that's valid.
Yeah, definitely.
But maybe let's think about ways that could either make me feel better or change the situation that I'm in. And that sometimes means doing actually nothing, and it sometimes means doing every effort you got.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know, it's I guess being in touch with your feelings and what you need at that moment.
But it's super complicated.
Yeah, of course. We're talking.
It's super.
Nobody does
it's
that.
Like, it's
super easy to talk, but
it's like terrible to. I mean, I hate complaining. It's really complicated, but I would like prefer like to actually
do stuff
and try to, you know. But it's complicated.
Yeah,
sometimes
sure.
I just sit and I'm just like. Yeah,
life sucks.
My life sucks. I want to go away.
Yeah, but I think that's quite
that's
valid.
Human.
Yeah,
that's human. We all feel that. It's like the 1975 song.
Yeah,
I always want to die. Sometimes we've all been through that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all sometimes want the. Since things are so complicated, we just sit there and think, oh my god, this would be so much easier if I wasn't here.
Yeah.
If I didn't have to go through all of this, if I didn't have to do all of that stuff and just live.
do nothing.
Yeah, but those moments are important as well.
Yeah.
We cannot...
They need to exist so we can evolve on them.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We can... Yeah. I don't know about you, but I want to read the book now.
Yeah,
yeah,
me too.
I went to Amazon right away to search it because I actually discovered this movie. I didn't know it was coming out. And I started watching this booktuber, it's Noelle Gallagher, and she loves reading horror books and Stephen King stuff. And she was talking about this, she said it was amazing, and that it was coming on Netflix. And I was like, oh yeah, that's cool. And the week after I saw that movie, it was on Netflix. I was like, damn, this was really quick.
Yeah.
and then I saw the movie. I was just really interested, like intrigued. And it turns out the book is even
more
interesting
because
it makes you, I don't know, I just think it pulls you even more into the whole existential dread thing and makes you even more scared of what is happening in it. And that's quite interesting.
But
please be careful when you read it. Don't go into the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Stay positive.
Please.
Yeah, positive vibes, guys. Positive vibes.
Yeah, this got like really deep,
really
fast.
Yeah, like
yeah.
No, but this is what the movie does.
Yeah,
yeah. So if you are the kind of person that likes to, you know, sometimes because it isn't healthy to do it all the time to think about, you know,
life
and existence and all that stuff, this movie really pulls you into that part of yourself, and that's really interesting.
Yeah.
How. a movie can do that, you know? Yeah. I mean, all movies have that power, but yeah, you know, there's just something about this one.
Yeah, but you know, like, we're not talking about indie scene, right? But commercial cinema is not really in the mood, always in the mood of make you think. Of course, it can make you think, and sometimes it is great too. But it's more in the mood of entertaining you.
Yeah.
And so yeah, you go there to think, but not too much. You go there more to like just
be entertained
time and like the time you spend.
Yeah, kind of vent out.
Yeah. And so sometimes I think, and I actually love the fact that Netflix actually got into that mood, because those are movies that people from the, let's say, mass audience needs to watch, needs to see, needs to know that it exists, and
how productive it can be for yourself.
Yeah, of course. And I think that Netflix is really, like, I don't know, usually I don't really like Netflix originals. We always have this like kind of cliche of, oh, it's a chick flick or whatever.
Yeah, kind of setbacks.
Yeah, but no, it can have great things in the middle.
Yeah.
It's always good.
Actually, it has a lot of horror, like
originals.
Yeah, like the 2 weeks after I'm Thinking of Ending Things, the one that's The Devil All the Time.
Oh.
I don't know if it's good or not. I didn't watch it, but with Tom Holland and Robert Pattinson and things like that. Yeah.
Oh really? Oh, it's that one. I saw it.
Yeah.
Saw
it has a lot of like famous actors in it, and a few months prior to this, The Platform. You know, the Spanish horror movie that is a lot more like visual and gore, so it's really not the same vibe, but horror is kind of in, so I'm kind of liking it, because usually it's not very put out there, I guess, on the streaming platform.
It's really cool that Netflix has is taking this path, even if it's starting out small, you know.
Yeah.
It's good to have that experience.
And
there.
This is a great risk.
I'm thinking of ending things
for Netflix.
A really big risk, and one that really pays off, because this is just,
if it really pays off, I don't know, because when
it pays off, you know, like
when searching for the movie, I saw a lot of people that
didn't like it
because
it's confusing.
It was confusing, or it was too long, or they weren't in the mood, you know, they're not like used to see those more long type of movies.
Yeah.
And others that were just like, you know, taking it from an upper point of view, like, oh, it's just trying to be intelligent, but it's not, you know, just having comments. And I'd be, okay, I mean, I get where this comes from, because I've thought that from some, about some movies, and so I get that, but I don't think this is the case.
Yeah.
I really don't. But I mean, if you think that.
No, I think something that our teachers often say, and have been saying this since we got since we got into cinema, is that we don't have to watch the whole movies in a whole sitting. If the movie is too long, or if we're just not in the mood, or just losing concentration, we can perfectly stop at the middle of it and continue on
another day.
Because being forcing ourselves to watch that
it's never
movie,
good. You're never gonna like this.
You're gonna end up frustrated, because even if it's good, or if you could have actually liked it, but because of the fact that the moment wasn't the best, and you were just tired and impatient, you didn't discover that. And I think that happened with a lot of people who watched this movie.
There are some cases where it happens, but you know, oftentimes, or most of the times, you don't read a book in a whole sitting.
Yeah,
so you're reading the same story, but you're giving it breaks. You know, you read like 1 hour every day or whatever, and
1 hour every month.
sometimes it happens. I mean, right now I'm reading The Book of Disquiet by our little own Fernando Pessoa, and I mean, I can't read more than like a few pages at a time, because it's really heavy, but it's really fulfilling to go back to it. And you know, with movies it can be the same. You know, you can start, exactly like you said, you can start and not be really in the mood, or it starts to get too hard for you to watch it, or just take a break, you know. If it's 15 minutes and you pause and you go to the bathroom and you make a snack or something, or if it's a 1 hour break, or if it's a 1 day or a 1 week break,
I mean,
if you find yourself in the space for it again,
yeah,
you know, it's way better to rewatch it with another mindset than forcing yourself just because you think you have to watch it. Yeah.
You don't.
You know, I know movies were supposedly made for a one sitting experience.
Not all movies,
yeah, but I mean, some of them. But you know, just do what works for you, you know? It's like, there aren't really rules in this kind of stuff. Yeah. You experience things in the best way for you, you know? You're your own individual, so why are you forcing yourself to what...
To what
is supposed to be. Yeah. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, I could have never survived the 7 hours long Satan Tango by Bellatar in one sitting. I'm sure I couldn't ever. But I saw it and I liked it in two sittings, actually, because I was really into it. But not everybody can be into it, and it depends on the day. I've also watched smaller movies, like feature films, normal feature films, like 2 hours or 1 hour and a half long, and like in a lot of sittings, actually, like a lot of sittings. But I mean, it's the mood, you know.
It depends.
You just, it's with yourself, and you're not forced to watch any movie or to, like, end any movie you begin. Like, there's a lot of movie I never.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And so, with this few tips about how you can watch movies and read books and enjoy things in your own pace and in your own comfort, I think we're gonna end the episode here. It's getting a bit long.
Just a bit.
And so, yeah, I mean, we hope you liked it. We're gonna find a way to get your opinions on this. Probably Instagram.
On social media.
Yeah, we're gonna try and get social media. And such a hard concept. And we really want this to be a collaborative experience.
Yeah.
And a sharing
point of view.
Yeah. A sharing community and a place where we experience things.
We can all talk freely.
Without
being judged.
Yeah, because there is no right point of view.
Of course.
And it becomes more interesting if we all share our opinions and make a whole lot of it.
So we can evolve together.
Yeah, exactly. And so,
That's it.
That's it. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
Thank you. Oh, my God.